the Laps Factor Podcast.
What is up, college lacrosse fans? You're watching episode number 254 of the Lax Factor Podcast. I am your host, Ted Hoost, and today we're going to talk about a bunch of Division I lacrosse games that are being played this weekend. There's actually a bunch of games being played tonight. I'm not going to cover any of those, although at the end of the show we'll take a quick look at them. The games I'm going to talk about, all Saturday games: Virginia Duke, Ohio State Hopkins, Cornell Army, Loyola, Boston University, UNC Syracuse, and we'll talk about a bunch of others, including a bunch of Ivy League matchups, some America East matchups, and other conferences as well. Before I get into it, as always, be sure to like and subscribe. If you're an audio listener or you're watching on Spotify, just be sure to share the crap out of this with all of your homeboys. And as always, you can go to laxfactor.com. You can get yourself some swag, podcast related gear, non-podcast related gear. You can also watch all of our videos on the site, and then you can even go to the podcast page and you can find the audio versions. But anytime you're trying to figure out what the heck has Ted put out this week, just go to laxfactor.com and you can always find right on the homepage the latest videos and episodes and the videos for them, along with the full-on blog post. But I'm going to shut up now, because I want to dive right into this Duke and Virginia matchup. It's number 2 Virginia against number 3 Duke, and they're playing this one at Duke in Durham, North Carolina. There aren't any playoff implications that are, you know, really outside of just NCAA seeding and things like that. So there's no must-win scenarios in order to get either of these teams in via an at-large bid. They've both already pretty much punched their tickets with the quality wins that they've accumulated, and neither of them have any bad losses overall. So this one just comes down to being an excellent conference rivalry. Duke beat Virginia a couple of weeks ago in Charlottesville. Duke has owned Virginia, and I only went back as far as 2014. But since 2014, in the regular season, Duke is 9-0 against the Cavaliers. It doesn't matter where they play, Duke has owned Virginia over the course of the last 10 seasons. Virginia's only win over the last 10 seasons was in the NCAA tournament in 2019. Virginia actually beat Duke and then went on to win the national title that year. So when it mattered the most, Virginia was able to pull out a win, but you know, Duke has legitimately owned Virginia. I didn't even realize that the Blue Devils just wrecked the Cavs that often. I didn't know that there was such a one-sided look in terms of this rivalry. I would have believed it, you know, if you went back to like 2010 and forward, but for this to be the case from 2014 forward, you know, and even recently, that's pretty incredible here. That's a pretty incredible stat. It comes down to Brennan O'Neill against Connor Schellenberger. Now, Brower held Schellenberger to no goals in their last meeting. Schellenberger had 3 assists, but they all came in extra man play. So Brower was technically perfect against Shelley in that last meeting. On the flip side, Brennan O'Neill put up 6 goals and 3 helpers in that win that they had over the Cavs. I think Virginia has the slightly deeper defense overall, but you can't argue with what Brower did against Schellenberger. So pretty much let's call that a wash. Both of these defenses at the moment are playing good lacrosse. Both teams have capable goalies. And if we kind of pop in here and we look at what Helm and Nunes look like against each other, Helm at 52%, Matthew Nunes at 50% for Virginia. So that's kind of a wash and cage. Nunes can get hot at times. I think Helm can as well. So both teams have a good goalie. And then if we come in here and we're looking at the faceoff dot, Naso, obviously, we've been talking about him all season, an incredible season, 63% at the dot. Petey Lasala, a very capable 58% at the dot. But note, Petey Lasala got the better of Nunes in their first meeting. If we come in here and we look at what Petey Lasala did against Duke, we see 59% here. Now, Duke, the kicker being, Duke won that game despite Petey Lasala getting the better of Jake Naso in that one. But the moral of that story is that Lasala's capable. He could try to keep the possession disparity in favor of Virginia. That is almost going to be needed, I think, as well as Duke is playing for Virginia to win this game. But like I said, Lasala did win 59% of the draws in their last meeting, and that still resulted in a Virginia loss. So that's not the whole story here. I think that that matchup, though, is going to be something to watch, because revenge is a real thing in terms of the faceoff dot. And every once in a while, especially in the ACC, where you see, hey, someone got the better of the other guy, oftentimes that next game, that other guy gets the better of his opponent. So I think if Duke does flipped the script and Naso wins the bulk of the draws, I think that's going to be very difficult for Virginia to overcome. But Duke has already proven that they could lose, you know, the bulk of the draws and still win a game. I'm rambling here now. In the end, I'm not going to beat these all to a dead into the ground like a dead horse, because we have, in fact, talked about all these teams a million times. So I'm going to get right to the prediction. My prediction, because I can't pick against Duke until they give you reason to, my prediction is Duke wins this game at home by one or two goals, and Virginia will drop to 8-3. Duke will improve to 11-2. And like I said, in the end, it doesn't matter. They're just playing for seeding, bragging rights, and pride here at this point. The next game I want to talk about is not this one. It is this Army and Cornell matchup. Number six Cornell against number seven Army. This game is being played at Army. Now, for this matchup, it's going to be CJ Kirsten company doing battle on the road against Army. And it's an Army team that many expected to hang somewhere in the area of number 17 to number 23 or so in terms of national ranking, but they have nicely overachieved and picked up some solid wins in the process here overall and en route to a 9-1 record. After the Black Knights lost to then unranked UMass in their season opener, and now UMass is now ranked, I believe, I was thinking, okay, I was right. Army was going to be one of the first teams to drop out of that top 20. And that looked like, and I think it did happen. I think they did drop out of the top 20 briefly. But they followed that loss up with a win over number 9 Rutgers, and later in the season beat number 20 Loyola. Now number 20 Loyola. Lehigh, they're also a top 25 team in terms of RPI. They're sitting at 22, so that's also a solid win for Army. So what I'm saying is at 9-1, Army is slowly but surely looking like a legit Patriot League contender with matchups against Navy and Boston U looming here to finish out their season. For Army, they're currently sitting at number 19 in terms of RPI. They're technically on the bubble outside of winning the Patriot League and punching that automatic bid, which they certainly have a shot at. A win over Cornell, that could certainly raise that RPI quite a bit. A loss to Cornell wouldn't actually hurt Army all that badly, so long as they handle their business and they can beat Navy and Boston U in the upcoming weeks. But at the moment, even, whoa, geez, I just racked my mic up. At the moment, even at 9-1, Army isn't guaranteed anything. If they lose to Cornell and then they turn around and they lose to both Navy and Boston U, the Black Knights are probably one of the first teams left out of the NCAA tournament, because those losses against Navy, that'll definitely be counted as a bad loss, and Boston U, not a top RPI team at this point either. That would probably keep them out. So the Army needs to handle their business in these final three games to make sure they're continually improving their resume in the event they need an at-large bid. And even then, they're going to, I think, be on the bubble. But a win against Cornell here will go a long way towards getting them that at-large bid, making them feel a little bit more comfortable there, and then they can still try to handle their business in the Patriot League tournament. Now, for Cornell, their resume is a bit more solid, unlike Army. They don't have any more games against foes, I think, that would count as bad losses in terms of RPI, so I don't think their RPI would get dragged that badly, even if they lost a couple of games here to finish out the season. With that said, the Ivy League teams aren't enjoying the same RPI advantage that they had a season ago, so every game still counts overall. I think so long as the Big Red can go 2-3 over these next three games that they have to play, that will pretty much guarantee their ticket is punched, as they right now are sitting at a 7 RPI, and they're playing well enough that I feel confident they're going to probably have a good chance at winning out even over the course of these last three games. CJ Kirst, he's been on an absolute warpath this season, leading the nation in points per game, 5.78 goals per game and 5.78 points per game and 4.78 goals per game. He's only been below 5 points on three occasions this season, and he's had quality outings against some good teams. 4-1 against Ohio State, 5 goals against Yale, 7 goals against Penn, 4 goals and a helper against Harvard. The kid shows up game in and game out. That's not going to be any different this weekend. Beyond Cornell claiming the best player on the field, they also have the better goaltender in Chase Erlin and their face-off duo of Angelo Petrakis and Jack Cascadden. They should fare well enough against Will Colletti of Army that Army doesn't get some kind of gross possession advantage. I think in the end in this one, the edge goes to Cornell. I think Cornell does win this game on the road. I think they might even win it by a margin of somewhere in the area of 3-5 goals overall. But Army is way overachieved. Every quality team they've played, I've wondered, is this going to be the game Army finally drops? And other than losing that first game of the year to UMass, they just continually have won games, 9-game winning streak at this point. So I do think Cornell will win, but believe me, Army certainly capable of pulling out the upset here. Next game I want to talk about here, number 18, Ohio State against number 7, Johns Hopkins. Now, Hopkins has been as good as anyone this season. Their RPI is actually number 4, I believe, at this point. I'll talk about that later in this little segment. Their 3 losses are all to solid teams, and they've picked up a slew of quality wins to help bolster their resume overall. That loss last weekend to Penn State's going to sting, as the Jays will likely be looking for blood against Ohio State this weekend in the friendly confines of Homewood Field. Now, Ohio State's feeling pretty desperate at this stage. They lost that heartbreaker last weekend to Maryland that included the now infamous shit move out of Tillman. We won't talk about that anymore. I definitely triggered a lot of Maryland fans there. My goal wasn't to trigger the Maryland fans. I wasn't trying to be a jerk. I am a big fan of Maryland as a team. I am a fan of what this team particularly, I mean, last year's team, I was impressed with what they did. I'm a little bit more impressed with what this year's team has done after losing all of that talent that they lost a year ago. I was not pleased with Tillman, and my trashing of Tillman mostly only came because I held him in such high regard leading into this game. As I had said, if you'd asked me, who are your top 3 favorite coaches in the NCAA, I would have definitely went with Tiffany as my number 1 at Virginia right now. I would have went with Tillman as my number 2 in terms of coaches that I just think, like, you guys are just killing it. I still think Tillman's killing it. He's still probably the second best coach in college across right now to Lars Tiffany. It's just he's not my favorite anymore after pulling that dick move. But the Maryland team, man, they've just had a hell of a season, and credit to them and to Tillman for that. The kicker here in this one is Myers also did not react well. He looked like a big baby. He blew a big chance to take the high road, as Tillman did a few years ago when, if you recall, back in that NCAA tournament where Virginia knocked Maryland out. It was the goal that wasn't a goal that knocked Maryland out of that. It didn't knock Maryland out of that tournament. It was very much like the Ohio State situation where Tillman's dick move didn't cost Ohio State that game. Ohio State blew a lead late and lost that game. That's exactly what happened with the goal that wasn't a goal in the case with Virginia, where Maryland had a huge lead. Tillman made a boneheaded move in terms of how they stalled the ball out. That allowed Virginia some momentum. Then that goal without a goal snowballed that shit. But for real, Myers didn't react well to this either, and he certainly blew a chance to take the high road and win some sympathy. So anyway, moving on from that. Those 2 losses in a row from the Buckeyes, they lost to Penn State and then Maryland back-to-back. And they have Hopkins and Michigan on the road to close out their regular season. It's a must-win game for Ohio State in terms of trying to bolster their resume. If they can win out here, now they've got a resume that might get them an at-large if they could pick up another win in the Big Ten tournament. But the reality for Ohio State here is they're just thinking, we just got to win out. You want to win out because you want to have at least a shot at an at-large bid. And right now, for instance, Hopkins is Right now, Ohio State is one of Chris Jast. I always call him Chris Jast because I can never remember how to pronounce his freaking last name. But Chris Jast, he did a great job with doing some bracketology over here. Right now, if the season were to end, he has Ohio State as one of his, I think it was his 4th team out, one of the first 4 teams out of the tournament. So they're just thinking, we got to win all the rest of our regular season games to have a shot in an at-large. But everybody makes the Big Ten tournament, so they always have that automatic qualifier if they can win the Big Ten tournament. So at-large, not out of the question, but they're going to have to win some games. Hopkins, they're sitting at number 4 in terms of RPI at the moment, so I'd imagine their ticket is pretty much punched. Nothing would please the Jays more than winning out from here and then winning the Big Ten tournament, because that will ensure that some of their Big Ten foes do not get to go dancing if they can both win the tournament and win out, because they could greatly hurt Ohio State's chances of an at-large bid. Probably losing to Hopkins this weekend kills Ohio State's chances of an at-large bid, so they could murk their Ohio State's chances this weekend in that way, and then by winning the tournament, they murk everyone's chances. I think the Big Ten, they could get 3 teams in, depending on how things play out down the stretch here. But Ohio State will not be one of those 3 teams if they lose this weekend. This one, in terms of the actual matchup, Both goalies are streaky. I give a slight edge to Hopkins and Tim Marcille because he's been a little bit more consistent than Skyler Wallend, and Skyler Wallend is coming off two back-to-back rough outings here in Ohio State's last two losses. Big edge goes to Ohio State's faceoff crew, though. Drew Blanchard and Matthew Fritz, they've been splitting time overall, despite Blanchard having a much better percentage, but them splitting that time and throwing different looks at opponents' faceoff guys has helped them quite a bit in terms of not letting those other teams get into a groove. But I, in the end, I think it's the Hopkins offense that I like the most. I'm digging what Jacob Angeles, Russell Melendez, and Garrett Degnan have done as their top three leading scorers. And then Brendan Grimes, Matt Collison, Peschko anchoring the midfield. They've all looked good as well at times. So I like the Hopkins offense overall. And my prediction in this one is that Hopkins pulls out a 2-4 goal win at home. I rambled oddly in that one. I apologize here. Next one, number 20, Loyola against Boston U. Now, Boston U was my preseason favorite to win the Patriot League, and despite losing to Vermont in their season opener, they've put together a resume that made me believe that it was still a very good possibility that they would end up winning the Patriot League. They beat Bryant, UMass, and Harvard en route to this to a 7-1 start, but then they lost to Navy and now Yale, and the Terriers are kind of reeling a little bit heading into this tilt versus number 20 Loyola on Saturday. Those two losses have dragged the Boston U RPI enough that an at-large bid isn't likely without them winning their last three games. Their RPI is currently 29th, with Loyola sitting at number 20, Lehigh at number 22, and Army at number 19 in terms of RPI. They all have higher RPIs than Boston U. They have three shots at improving their own number, and if they can knock off all three of these teams, that does improve their chance of an at-large bid a little bit. For Loyola, they're sitting at number 20 in the nation in both the media poll and number 20 in RPI. The Patriot League tournament can go to anyone at this point. Nobody is going to be able to just say, hey, I think this team's going to win and be accurate. It is literally just probably a 3 or 4 team race at this point, and I think any one of those teams are as likely to win as the next. Even with the head-to-heads going certain ways, I think that the next time these teams play, it could go very differently. So all of these teams here, now they're kind of jockeying for position in the tournament. They're trying to jockey for position in the mental game and all of that crap, improving their tournament seeds for the Patriot League tournament, and also trying to kind of eke that RPI up enough that maybe the Patriot could get two teams in. I don't think there's any world in which the Patriot gets more than two teams into the tournament, but they could for sure pull two teams. The issue, all of the top Patriot League contenders are hanging out with an RPI of like 19 or greater. And I think Chris Jast had said, since 2014, four teams with an RPI higher than 15 have gotten into the NCAA tournament. But 19 is not a place you want to be sitting if you don't win your conference tournament and you're on the bubble there. So all of them, none of them have a huge chance at being able to greatly boost their RPIs. But if the teams that are kind of lower in that RPI can knock off the teams that are higher, they could certainly kind of flip who's on the bubble in the Patriot in that way. And then Chris Jast, in his bracketology that he just put out, I think updated it this morning, he has North Carolina in at the moment, and he also has Loyola in at the moment. If the season were end today, Loyola gets an at-large bid. Boston U obviously does not. Boom. Now, in terms of this matchup, Loyola, they boast the more effective goaltender. Luke Stout's been at 56% here so far to Matt Garber's 46%. Boston U has an edge at the faceoff dot as Connor Calderon has been pretty solid this season, winning 56% of the draws. And if we look here at what Loyola's hanging out at, yeah, we can see Eric Pacheco, 45%, and that's just not gonna get it done against Connor Calderon. So Loyola gonna have to get creative at the faceoff dot to make sure that possession edge doesn't, you know, favor Boston U too much. But even if it does, I like the rope unit for Loyola to be able to kind of maybe mix it up a little bit between the boxes and maybe win some of those possessions back. Sometimes off the faceoff draw, if they might lose the draw, maybe they can get it back before a possession starts for Boston U, or even in the ride game, the late ride game, you know, between midfield and back into the box, things like that. So in the end, I think that Loyola's experience on defense, I like that. I think that should match up well against Boston U's experience on offense. And as long as Matthew Minakis, we're looking here in terms of their leading scorers, I think as long as freshman Matthew Minakis is in the lineup for Loyola and feeling good, I think Loyola is going to end up winning this game by 1-3 goals overall on the road. But once again, it could go either way here, and both teams really need that win. All right. Now, this one is a must-win situation. Number 11, North Carolina, hosting Syracuse. Probably you could call this almost a must-win for both teams. Carolina is seemingly sitting pretty at the moment, ranked number 11 in the country, and they have a number 9 RPI ranking. However, if they lose this game to Syracuse and Syracuse gets crazy and wins another game or two as Selection Sunday approaches, because Syracuse has to close the season with Duke and Virginia, that could put the selection committee in an odd place where UNC could have an RPI worthy of getting in, but they end up having to pick between Syracuse and UNC because the head-to-head was split, and Syracuse, if they win their last two games, would end up maybe having a better resume because their last two games are against number 2 and number 3 in terms of RPI. Now, make no mistake. I say this. I'm a huge Cuse homer. Everybody knows this. Make no mistake. I think the odds are favoring North Carolina at the moment, both in this game and in terms of tournament selection, partly because North Carolina has already built a better resume than Syracuse. They've already got a win over number 4, Johns Hopkins, in terms of the RPI. They have already beat Syracuse once head-to-head. Brown's a top 30 RPI team. So they don't have a terrible resume. The problem is that if Syracuse is able to beat both Virginia, even one of those teams, including North Carolina, but if they could also beat Virginia and Duke, if Syracuse wins out, that really will flip this because Carolina's probably not going to beat Notre Dame twice here to finish the season out. And if they lose to Syracuse and then twice to Notre Dame, Carolina will have finished the season with 4 straight losses. Syracuse, even if they split 2 of the, let's say they go 2-3 over the next 3, and one of those games is a win over Carolina. Now I think the committee is going to have 2 teams with very similar RPIs, and they're going to have to pick between those 2, and it'll come down to the head-to-head. It'll come down to RPI. It's going to come down to quality wins. More importantly, it'll come down to bad losses. Neither team will have bad losses at this point, but Carolina would end up having more losses than Syracuse would. Or about the same. Who knows? I'm an idiot, man, and I don't know anything anyway, so who cares? Now, overall, face-off advantage. Or no, in-cage advantage definitely goes to Will Mark and Syracuse. Colin Krieg, a very good goalie between the pipes, but Mark has been better on average this season with a 58% stop rate. I think Krieg's is 52%. Technically, we could actually just look here since I'm hanging out in this space. Yeah, I guess I can't. Preview. There we go. So, yes, we could see Krieg. Yeah, Krieg's at 52% overall. Interestingly, though, Mark has only been below 50% twice this season, and he was below 50% in that loss to Carolina. I think he was at 47%, I believe, or what my notes say. So, definite advantage to Will Mark and to Syracuse, but Will Mark had one of his rougher outings against Carolina in that loss the last time. Face-off advantage. Definitely advantage to Andrew Tyre of Carolina. He beat Syracuse up a little bit last time they faced each other in that loss, in the Syracuse loss. However, Jack Fine looked great for Syracuse in this weekend's game against Princeton. So the Orange Faithful, we're all hoping, including myself, we're all hoping that maybe the uptick in reps for Fine is what he needed to maybe find some sort of groove. So maybe Fine can be much better than Ricusa has been at the faceoff dot. And if Syracuse can split the draws or just do a better job at the faceoff dot in their remaining games, they've got a much better chance of winning these games. As I said, overall, Syracuse offense probably edge over Carolina. The Syracuse defense hasn't even been that bad despite the playing with the possession disparity all season long. But the Heels, they scrap, they fight, and they had Syracuse's number already in the dome in their first meeting. Syracuse's backs are against the wall. If they win, their hope for an at-large bid is still alive. If they lose, they'll have to upset both Virginia and Duke in back-to-back weekends to even have a shot. And even then, I think it's still a long shot. As I said, for Carolina, win this one, you are more than likely in the NCAA tournament, even if you lose twice to Notre Dame to finish the season. I think if they beat Syracuse, their resume is good enough. They'll be 8-6 if they lost the last 2 to Notre Dame. So I think for Carolina, you win and you're in. And I think Syracuse, they're going to be kind of leaning on the, hey, we're the injured dog. We got our backs against the wall. We have to win. But Carolina, their only inspiration needs to be, if we win this game, we've just improved our chance of getting an at-large bid by burying Syracuse's chances of even having a shot at it. So I think that for Carolina, they have enough incentive that they're not going to fall victim to one team coming into the game with more motivation than the other. In the end, I've done very well so far this season predicting games. I forget exactly what I am, but I'm somewhere in the area of like 36 and 21 or something like that coming into last weekend, or maybe it was after last weekend. But the bulk of my losses, a big chunk of my losses, I should say, are in games where I pick Syracuse to win just because I'm a Cuse homer. I'm going to do it again. I'm picking Syracuse to win by a goal in overtime in this one. But just know that this pick is slightly, if I went really by the odds and what I felt was going to happen, I'd probably go with Carolina. But I have to go with the Cuse magic, and I'm picking Syracuse to win this one overall. All right. That's the end of what I have actually written up with notes. Now we're going to kind of fly by the seat of our pants and check out some other matchups that are important. We have Harvard hosting Penn. Now, Penn at 4-5. Harvard at 5-4. Penn is still the ranked team technically. Let me get to the rankings. So as I'm going through here, I know I hate it when that happens. All right, let me get back to where I was. It's not even going to let me. All right, hold on, folks. Inside Lacrosse, you have to get rid of that ad. The navigation of your site is trash because of the way that ad system works. You can't, it's stupid. Stupid, it makes me mad. It's just something else for me to complain about here. Okay, so now we get in here. Penn is ranked despite their 4-5 record. That's making a lot of people mad. But when you look at what they've done, a win over Georgetown, a loss to Duke, a loss to Penn State. Those two losses don't look bad. You beat St. Joseph's. That's a decent team. That's not a bad win. You lose to Villanova. Once again, not a terrible loss. You beat Princeton. Decent win. Lose to Cornell. Not a terrible. You know, so their only real bad loss here is to Brown overall. But then you look at some of the teams they've beat, and they've beaten Georgetown. They've beaten St. Joseph's, who was ranked at one point. They beat Princeton, who was highly ranked at one point. They beat Yale. They're beating some good lacrosse teams while also losing to some decent lacrosse teams here. So yes, I do agree. I think Penn is to a degree sitting here now with their backs against the wall because the Ivy League tournament, not everybody gets in. So they're playing for kind of, not even kind of. I mean, they're playing for Ivy League positioning here because right now at 2-2 in the Ivy with a couple of games left to play, you know, Brown picks up this win. Or no, Harvard. Harvard's already in here. Yeah, so depending on what happens, they definitely want to be one of the top four teams left in the Ivy come season's end. They definitely, I don't think, have a resume that's built to get them into the NCAA tournament without winning out from here for the most part. And even then, I mean, what, you beat Harvard? That's the last decent win you can pick up. And then here, so I mean, for Penn, it's pretty much win to make sure you're staying in the Ivy League tournament contention. And then they're going to have to, I think, win the Ivy League tournament to actually get themselves into the NCAA tournament. If we're looking at offense here, I actually like how these offenses match up. I think Harvard has a little bit more depth overall. Sam King, even Sam King has more points than Sam Hanley does at this point in the same amount of games. And then if you look, Teddy Malone, Owen Gaffney, they're filling it out pretty tight here behind him. And then you look at Penn, 33 points for Sam Hanley. And then offensively, it kind of falls off. Penn not going to put a ton of goals on the board, but they play pretty solid defense overall. So I actually give a little bit of an edge, I think, overall in terms of quality and depth of offense. I give a little bit of an edge to Harvard. I give the overall edge to Penn because they got this guy sitting out here at the top. Like, I'm not a big fan of volume shooters at the midfield. And guys like Handley are definitely considered volume shooters in the midfield, but the dude also scores game-winning goals in close games, and he's just an absolute beast, matchup nightmare. So slight edge to Penn offensively overall, but I like the depth that Harvard brings to the table, and I'm a big fan of Sam King here. In terms of the goalie battle, Emmett Carroll has been a little bit better, a little bit more consistent overall than Christian Bernard has been for Harvard. And then at the faceoff dot, neither team doing anything great, so that's pretty much a wash. Now, in the end, as I'm picking the winner here, when I do my predictions, I don't count the games I pick off hip in my totals. I only count the games that I write up as part of the blog post as my totals here, but I do pick everyone I talk about. I do think Penn probably wins this game. I think Penn has a slight edge, partially because of Sam Handley, partially because I think they're a little bit better defensively, and partially because I think they're a little bit better in cage. So slight edge to Penn. I do think Penn wins a close game in this one, but it could truly go either way, and Harvard is going to for sure do battle at home. Next up here, we've got Yale hosting Brown. Yale has dropped out of the top 20 in terms of the media poll, but Yale, in terms of RPI, is still the number 11 team in the country in terms of RPI. So even though they're not in the top 20 anymore in terms of rankings, they're still in the hunt in terms of an at-large bid. And the reason I bring the at-large bid up is because that ends up being huge. Like, see, once again, I hit the shift key and it didn't take me there. Yale is still in play here overall for an at-large bid. As long as Yale can win out, no matter what happens in the Ivy League tournament, Yale probably gets an at-large bid. But winning out's going to be tough here. They don't want to drop to either Brown or Harvard because they're both below Yale in terms of RPI. So that will drag Yale's RPI down from 11. So you could call that Brown and Harvard game just about must win in terms of keeping them in contention for a really good chance at an at-large bid. That Albany game is a must win because you lose to Albany. That is for sure dragging your RPI. That's giving you a bad loss, and that's at Albany. So Yale has some business to take care of, but I do like their chance of taking care of said business. Now, if we get into offensively, I like Yale and their youngsters mixed with Matt Brandau more than I like Brown. Now, Devin McClain has been out of the lineup here and there for Brown, so as long as I think he's in the lineup, Brown's going to have a fighting chance in this game. Yale has proven they'll give up goals overall on the season. So Brown could certainly win this game in a shootout against Yale. But edge does, I think, go to Matt Brandau, Chris Lyons, Leo Johnson, Thomas Bragg, Brad Sharp. Those guys are all really good. In terms of in net, the people's goalie against Jared Paquette. So we give the edge in terms of who's in cage for these teams to Connor Theriault a little bit, but not that much. And the Brown defense is where it's hurt. I think Theriault himself has been very good this season. I think the Brown defense gives up a few too many shots overall and a few too many quality shots in the end. Faceoff dot, definite edge to Matthew Gunty and Brown. Gunty's been pretty good here overall this season. He's sitting at 62%. Nicholas Ramsey, I haven't watched him much. He's not bad, though. So slight edge to Brown there. I think in the end, as I'm coming down to it, and I got to pick this here, I think the edge goes to Yale. If I predicted this, I'm saying Yale wins in a close game at home nonetheless. Yale, I think, has a little bit more on the line. Like I said, Brown's RPI isn't terrible. Where are they in here? I have them off screen. Brown's RPI is right now sitting at 28. So they're not completely out of the hunt by any means. And in terms of Ivy League contention, Brown is only 1-2, but Brown has some Ivy League games left to play here. Actually, three Ivy League games left to play. They got Yale, Cornell, and Dartmouth. So Brown could get crazy. They could get hot at the right time, go on a run, pull off some wins late, and then win themselves some crap. But they've got to win themselves some crap, and it's going to start this weekend against Yale. My prediction, Yale wins a close one somewhere in the area of maybe 2-4 goals or whatnot. And the kicker with Yale is Yale could just beat the crap out of Brown too. Yale could win 20-10. Who knows? Yale's pretty much bipolar in terms of how they've played, especially offensively. So if everybody shows up for Yale offensively, Yale wins this one probably by 4 or 5 goals or more. If they don't, and if Brown can win at the faceoff dot, maybe even win big at the faceoff dot, I think Brown's in this game. And it should come right down to the wire. Another one, and this one's going to be important for America East play, is Vermont and Bryant. Bryant has done very well overall, sitting at 8-2 at the moment. They haven't picked up any real quality wins here. They've lost to Boston U. That loss to Air Force is not great. And the rest of their wins are very unimpressive. So I'm very curious to see how they're able to hold up against a good Vermont team. Vermont, on the other hand, a little bit better of a resume. They actually hold a win over Boston U. They have a win over Utah, who actually has the 14. Utah's got an RPI rating of 14. So that win actually is one of their better wins here at this moment. Losses to Brown, Harvard, and UMass don't hurt them a ton in terms of RPI. It doesn't make them look bad because those are all quality teams. And then when they got back into the stretch of playing three teams that they should beat, They did so in that game against Binghamton on the road. They beat Binghamton. Also, I think Binghamton was 9-2 at the time, or 7-2 at the time that they played Vermont. They beat them. So this game for Vermont and Bryant is going to be a big one. In terms of offense, I think that we have to give the edge to Bryant in terms of their depth of scoring. They're getting a little bit more depth in scoring than Vermont is. In terms of the goalie battle in this one, Matt Schaefer has been the better goalie out of this whole group here. Tegan Alexander at 49%, not quite as good as Matt Schaefer's 54%. And then the faceoff dot edge should go to Tommy Burke, but Nathan Laliberte, I don't even know how to pronounce that, Laliberte, he actually hasn't been too bad. Bryant's given two guys quite a few draws here, Jacob Alexander and this Nathan Laliberte. Laliberte, they have done a decent job here. Laliberte's sitting at 63%. But like I said, Bryant has not played quite as tough of a schedule as Vermont has. So I give the edge at the faceoff dot to Tommy Burke. In the end, I like what Vermont does offensively, especially while Burke is winning draws and doing a good job at the faceoff dot. I like Brock Haley and Klosterman. Those two guys are killers. And I think with Burke coming in here, this being a big conference matchup, I think this is the first time this has been a conference matchup for these teams. I think the fact that Bryant right now sitting at 4-0, Vermont sitting at 4-0 in the America East, the two undefeated teams left in the America East, this is going to make this a must-watch game for the most part. My prediction, Vermont by a goal, maybe two, because I think they're going to win when their backs are against the wall, and we're trying to figure out who's going to be the last unbeaten team in the America East Conference. I think it's going to be Vermont. Next one. This is, I believe, once again, another conference tilt. St. Joseph's and Hobart. Yep, St. Joseph's and Hobart. Right now, St. Joseph's is at the top of the Atlantic 10 at 2-0. Hobart sitting at 1-1, so the Atlantic 10 is still up for grabs, and they're still all jockeying for tournament position, and they do have an automatic qualifier as well. In the end, I love Hobart's offense, and I normally take Hobart when we're dealing in their conference matchups with offense. Not in this case, though. Carter Page, 43 points. Levi Anderson, 39 points. Matt Bomer, 33. Tucker Brown. I mean, St. Joseph's has a very experienced group of offensive players coming back here. So definite edge to St. Joseph's, although Hobart can hang and they can put goals up as well. In terms of the goalie battle, definite edge here. Kevin Holtby, is that? I thought Holtby was the guy who started for these guys and played well last year. Either way, Hobart, definite edge here goes to Scott. Oh, man, I don't even know who the hell. I'm going to not pick a goalie because I don't know who the hell they even have playing at this point here, because it looks like St. Lawrence's or St. Joseph's has played a bunch of goalies. So we're going to call the goalie situation a wash due to inconsistency out of St. Joseph's. Face-off battle, no question. Zach Cole has the edge, but I will say Adam Shea has been known to mix it up with very good face-off guys at times for Hobart. So definite edge to St. Joseph's, but Adam Shea can do some damage when his back's up against the wall. Now, in the end in this one, I think that Hobart can hang a little bit, but I do like St. Joseph's. I think St. Joseph's is just overall the better team. They're the more experienced team. Right now, they're playing slightly better lacrosse than Hobart is. So I think St. Joseph's wins this one, maybe even by a margin. Let's say 3-6 goals or so, I think, is within the realm of I think that's realistic. We have Richmond taking on High Point. And let's see here. This is once again another Atlantic 10 game. Both of them are sitting at 1-1 in the A-10 so far. I think offensively, you got to go with High Point. Now, I'm surprised I'm saying this, because High Point, I would have thought losing the talent that they lost last year, and especially talent like Asher Nolting, I would have thought they would have, from an offensive perspective, taken a huge dip. They have a little bit, but Jack Van Overbeek has been very good. 51 points here. Braden Maia, not as deadly as he's been in seasons past, but still able to get himself open. He's actually done a little bit better at creating shots for himself here this year. So I think a slight edge goes to High Point in terms of, I think their best offensive players, their top three or four best offensive players, are just a touch above Richmond's. But Dalton Young's a killer. Lance Madonna's also a killer. Luke Graham's been playing well. But still, slight edge, High Point. In terms of the goalie battle, slight edge to Zach Veek for Richmond, but Parker Green can get hot at times, and I believe Parker Green maybe coming up. Nope, Parker Green's coming off two stinkers here against UMass and Hobart. So I don't know. I call their goalie battle here a wash. Face-off dot situation, pretty much a wash. So this game is going to probably be a shootout and come right down to it in the end. I'm going to pick. I don't know, and I'm totally going off hip. I'm flipping a coin in my head. High Point, I'm going to pick by a goal or two in this one, but that's a total coin flip. I don't know. But it's going to be a hell of a game. Huge implications for A-10 tournament seeding. Another one, and I was surprised here overall with Providence. Providence does not have a great record. They're sitting at 5-6 here, but they played Georgetown tough. They beat Marquette. And they did that after getting the shit kicked out of them by North Carolina. So they're not playing terrible lacrosse is my point overall for Providence. And, you know, playing against Villanova, that's going to be tough. Now, I'm not trying to sit here and pick an upset in this case. I think Villanova is going to win this game. I think Villanova is going to win this game most likely by at least 3 to 5 goals, and it could be by more. But I noticed that after getting the crap kicked out of them by Carolina, that Providence has played two pretty solid games, and I was wondering how that would play heading into the matchup against Villanova. In terms of, you know, Matt Campbell's going to get his. Patrick Daly's been playing well. Austin Frazier as well. But if we come back down here, we're looking at a win over St. John's. Yeah, Villanova's lost two of their last three. They lost to Brown. They lost to Denver by a much larger margin than they would have wanted to. They kind of got the crap kicked out of them by Denver. So I'm thinking they're going to bounce back heavily, and they're probably going to beat the crap out of Providence. Let's say 5-plus margin, 5-plus margin in terms of Villanova winning this game. Man, my brain is not working well. We went and watched Super Mario Brothers last night. Not too late, but we got home a little later than I would have wanted to, so I'm feeling a little groggy here this morning. All right, last one I'm going to talk about here today is Lehigh and Colgate. Now, yeah, this is a weird one for me to pick because obviously Lehigh 7-3, Colgate 1-7. But if you look at what Colgate does, they lose close games, man. They're 1-7, but they got to be one of the better 1-7 teams in the country. One goal loss to Air Force, 2-goal loss to Hobart. Got beat up a little bit Boston U, but still only 6 goals. Then they beat up on Navy 17-8, lose to Lafayette by a goal, lose to Bucknell by 4, lose to a decent Harvard team by 4, and then lost to ranked Army by a goal at home. So I bring this one up because Colgate is not bad. This is a conference matchup. These teams are used to playing each other, and Colgate would love nothing more than to head into Lehigh and upset them. I do think Lehigh wins this game. If we go by the numbers, Lehigh should win by somewhere between 3 to 6 goals, but because Colgate hangs much tougher than they should, you know, that this is what happens. The why I bring this one up, though, is because in terms of positioning themselves for a at-large bid, a team like Colgate really could spoil the ever-living crap out of a team's chance at getting an at-large bid, because if a team like Lehigh loses to a team like Colgate at home, nonetheless, that is going to pull their RPI way down, and it will greatly diminish their chances of being able to get an at-large bid. So I thought this matchup was important, and I thought Colgate, they're losing a lot of games, but they're losing a bunch of those games by close margins. If they could just pull some magic out of their assholes, they could piss Lehigh off in more than one way. And that's it. That is the end of this episode. Come back Sunday morning. I'll try to get Sunday's show out as early as I can here, recapping all of these games from Saturday. If we kind of rip through and we try to see here what are some other matchups that we have on the table. Tonight's matchups, as I said, I wanted to talk about quick. Jacksonville. It almost seemed like tonight's games are like all of the lower level teams rocking it out. Jacksonville should beat Detroit Mercy. I see Utah, who's, you know, right on the edge of, what did I say their RPI was? Utah's RPI is 14th. They got a quality win over 24th ranked via the RPI Jacksonville. So not a whole lot of great games here, albeit some of these teams are going to be playing for positioning in terms of their conference tournaments. We had Denver playing at Towson on Thursday, Merrimack, UMass Lowell on Friday, so who cares? Do we have anything on Sunday that I didn't look at? Oh, duh. I didn't even think about this. We got Sunday's games. We got to preview 2 more games, folks. Michigan and Penn State, must-win game for Michigan. I say that, but it doesn't really matter. Michigan at this point is not getting an at-large bid. That's not true. That is not necessarily true. I'm looking off screen here. Michigan's RPI is 16th. Penn State's RPI is 6th. So Michigan, if they win this game, that will bring their RPI up into the area of 14. Top 15 RPI, they have a high chance of winning themselves an NCAA tournament bid. So Michigan, they have games left against Penn State and Ohio State. Both of them have decent enough RPIs that should. Ohio State's is 15th, Michigan's is 16th, and then, like I said, Penn State's is 6th. So pick up two quality wins right here. They've already got a quality win over Maryland. Michigan is a team that could absolutely win themselves an at-large bid. And like I said, Penn State, you could make the argument Penn State maybe already has a resume to get them in, but they've still got Michigan and Rutgers. So, I mean, it's one of those deals where what does that do to your RPI if you lose these two games and you end the season that way heading into the Big Ten? You lose three in a row, including the first round of the Big Ten tournament. That could bump them out. But, yeah, the right now the Big Ten looking really good. The Big Ten and the ACC are hanging right up there for obviously the two best conferences. And, yeah, so much more on the line than I was originally just off-hip thinking here in this one. I still think the edge goes to Penn State. Overall, if we look at it offensively, I give a slight edge to Michigan. I think they've got a little bit more depth at the top side, as you see here. I mean, hell, Josh Zuada, we would have thought was going to be their leading scorer. He's their third leading scorer right now behind Bame and Cohen. So that's good for Michigan. I think that Penn State has a little bit more depth as you get deeper into their roster. TJ Malone and Jack Traynor, Matt Traynor, those guys are all killers. Kevin Winkoff, the Binghamton transfer, has been playing really well. I think edge goes to Penn State, but let's check the goalie situation. Shane Carr is streaky. Him and Hunter Taylor were splitting time. Carr got the full game in their game last weekend, and Michigan ends up still losing to Rutgers, but played a tough one against Rutgers overall. So the edge definitely goes to Frasian for Penn State at 56% right there. Faceoff dot, like I said, Nick Rowlett and Justin Wheatfield, they kind of split faceoff time and they've done a good job together. Chase Mullins has also been good for Penn State, but I give a slight edge at the faceoff dot actually to Michigan in this one. So slight edge to Penn State and Cage, slight edge to Michigan at the faceoff dot. I think we give a little bit of an edge to Michigan offensively, and I give a definite edge to Penn State defensively. I think this is going to be a hell of a game, but I'm going to pick Penn State, beats them 2 goals, 4 goals, somewhere in that area. It could still go either way, but I do like Penn State to pull this one out. And then let's get out of there. Then we got Rutgers and Maryland. Maryland at Rutgers. Huge game here. I can't believe I almost forgot to talk about these games, and I would have absolutely deserve to get chirped and dragged for it. Let's see here. Rutgers 8-3, Maryland 7-3. Offensively, I give a slight edge to Rutgers. Maryland is going to do battle. Maryland's going to have a possession advantage more than likely. So their offense is going to be able to keep pace. I like the depth and the talent a little bit more on the Rutgers side. Brian Cameron is back to being healthy. He's playing well. Dante Coolis, who saw him being their, at one point he was their leading scorer. I didn't see that happening. I mean, when a guy like Ross Scott, who most would have assumed would have been Rutgers' leading scorer, is your fourth leading scorer, but only because these other guys are playing really well and Scott's not shooting the ball all that great. I mean, I think slight advantage goes to Rutgers offensively. In terms of the goalie battle, can't argue with what Ruppel's done. Kyle Mullen is the veteran of the between these two for Rutgers, but Brian Ruppel has played well at times, both streaky though, so I call the goalie battle a wash. Maybe a ever so slight edge in Mullen in terms of experience, but then a slight edge in Ruppel for Ruppel in terms of him having the better defense. So that's how I kind of come to a wash on the goalie battle. And in terms of the faceoff battle, forget about it. Dugenio, capable. You know, he can mix it up with guys, but obvious edge goes to Luke Weirman here at the faceoff dot. In the end, I'm going with Maryland. I think that if Luke Weirman handles his business, Maryland's going to win that possession battle, even if it's slightly. And I think that's all that Maryland will need defensively. I think they're going to match up really good against, really well against the Rutgers attack. You got Zapatello and Makar anchoring that defense with a young goalie. They're going to need to anchor that defense. But I think slight edge Maryland. I think Maryland wins this one by close game, 1-3 goals, and that's all she wrote. But yeah, both of these teams, I think, have built resumes that they're getting at the end of the day. So they're just jockeying for position and seeding at this point. But man, it's going to be a hell of a game. Can't believe I almost didn't talk about those games. That would have been a travesty. So that's it. Now I'm done. So thank you for watching. Thank you for listening. Come back on Sunday for the weekend recaps. And Hoost is out.
the Lax Factor Podcast.